Welcome to Green Spoon Martyr, Cannabis Quick Hits. My name is Ben Gelt. I serve as an advisor in the cannabis and tax groups at Green Spoon, and I'm here today with a partner, David Standa, in the cannabis group out of the Minneapolis-St. Paul office. David, how are you, man?
Hey Ben, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me in.
We're going to talk about Minnesota today. So your geography is no coincidence. Let's just start with a quick kind of overview of the state of the market. From David Standa.
Sure. So, recreational cannabis has been legal in the state for over 2 years now. There has not yet been a sale of recreational cannabis to a one of the newly licensed cannabis establishments yet, though, because there were lawsuits, there was a long application process, kind of things have been dragged out. That said, they have now issued licenses. There was two rounds. There was a social equity round kind of early summer, and then there was a second round that just happened towards the end of last month. Those licenses are now out the door. The winners have been notified and they're off and running. They're trying to secure real estate. And then in the background of all of that is a very strong tribal nation up here, tribal nations up here that have been growing cannabis on the reservations for a long time. And not only do they grow on the reservations and outside the regulatory structure that is set up by the OCM here, but they also have entered into compacts with the state that will allow them to sell their products off of the reservations. So they'll be able to place their dispensaries wherever they can find compliant locations that are compliant with the compacts that they've signed. So that's kind of the state
Have
of
we
play
seen
up
any
here.
tribal, have we seen any tribal groups go out off of the reservation, as it were, into other communities with dispensaries yet?
Yes, so they've all started that process. Whether or not they've none of them have opened to my knowledge yet, but they've all secured locations. They've all Saying all. Several
Amazing.
tribes have signed compacts. A lot of tribes are still negotiating there, trying to get them finalized, which will dictate what they can and can't do, where they can and cannot do it. But the ones that have signed are already secured in locations, or in some instances, had already secured the locations and then went and signed the compacts. But those negotiations have been going on for quite some time. Minnesota has a long history of that. They did it with gambling and casinos with the tribes 30 some years ago. So you know the precedent was set. It kind of was there was some writing on the wall, and the tribes are going to be critical here because all licenses were rolled out at the same time. So you now have retail operators that are looking to get up and running, to get operational. They want to start selling, and they can't because they don't have any product. And so they're going to have to, at least from the outset, look to the tribes and say, "Hey, we need you to supply us so we can get up and running." It sounds like the governor and the newly confirmed head of the OCM, who was an interim head of the OCM, are hoping that sales at the licensed non-tribal dispensaries start before the end of this year. That is the goal, that is the hope. And then they're going to look to 2026 as a true first year fully operational program.
And just to clarify, would a product that you can sell at a dispensary on a reservation be available to be sold? The same product, could it be sold off of a reservation at a either a standard licensed dispensary or at a tribal dispensary off reservation?
Yes, that is so. Per the terms of the compacts that are signed by the tribes, those dictate that dictate the taxes, they dictate the regulations, they dictate everything for what the tribes can do, who they can sell to, how those products will be moved in non-tribal dispensaries off of the reservations.
And is that all tracked in kind of the more or less normal way that many states track in terms of seed to sale, some sort of system, whether it's metric or BioTrack or something else?
So again, the terms of the specific compacts control the dispensaries themselves. So the non-tribal dispensary that's licensed is required to comply with all the regulations set out in the statute and the regs that have been propagated by the OCM. So as soon as it hits that dispensary's shelves, it's got to be put into the system. Now, whether or not it has to be done before that, I don't know the answer to that right now because, again, it's specific compacts. They're 50, 60, 100 pages long. I'm sure it's in there somewhere if you want to go dig through them, but as far as if you were looking to be a player, a non-tribal player in the Minnesota market, you certainly have to start tracking the second the product hits your possession, your shelves on it at a dispensary.
Interesting. That'll be a really interesting sort of compliance issue as people navigate their sourcing and all of that with their supply chain. So we've talked now a bit about the tribal groups and that are already in the space. Talk to us about who are the other players, who's coming in, who else has been around in Minnesota. If you're someone looking from the outside in at Minnesota, kind of thinking about who's there, who do you need to know in terms of who are the players there?
So there are two medical cannabis license holders that have been around since medical license or medical marijuana was legalized. And so that's Vero Health. The other one is a is GTI, but it's got a different name up here. But those are the two medical players that are working to transition into the recreational market, as every medical player does in every state when they go from medical to rec. And then there's a lot of homegrown Minnesotans that applied for a class of licenses called a micro business, which is a smaller vertically integrated license that allows you to grow and have one retail shop. And those licenses are now uncapped. And so there's a lot of interest and excitement. And a lot of those license holders' first step, because it was easier, was to secure the retail locations and are working getting open before they transition to try to find some small grow locations. Then the second set of players that I'm seeing are some smaller MSOs that are interested in adding a new state to their M part of the MSO, and they're looking to get into either the cultivation licenses, which are limited, or the retail licenses, which give you up to 5 retail stores. So think of typical brands that are focused on the retail side of things, whether they be in states like Michigan, Illinois. Minnesota seems to be like the natural next progression for them, as they situate to see if, Iowa and Wisconsin can get it figured out. But Minnesota is the next state that touches that kind of corridor. So they're looking to, whether it's through acquisition or whether or not they won licenses in the application round, to get their name in the door up here. I've yet to see any like truly large player MSOs in kick the tires here in Minnesota. And I think that's just because of the licensing structure and how it works and how it's hard to really get past that 5-store threshold. If you have that retail license, and also then there's a restriction on any sort of cross licensing ownership. So if you have a retail license, and then anyone that qualifies as a TPI, true party of interest in that retail license, cannot have any ownership interest in a cultivation or manufacturing or any other license. So they've really tried to silo everyone off. As we know, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this know, there's creative lawyering that always figures out ways around that. But that's kind of what I've seen, at least play out for now. And then obviously, the way we started this conversation, the big player, and then maybe somewhat of a hindrance to everything is that the tribes had a very big head start. They were able to start growing right away. They've got an infrastructure in place. They're extremely sophisticated. They're very smart. They're making really good deals. They're finding good locations. And so that's another piece to all of this, where if you're not in the state already and you're coming in to compete, do you want to compete with someone that was given that just naturally has a head start because of the way that everything is structured? And then add in potential rescheduling, potential descheduling, potential banking, like everything else. And it's, all the questions that the industry, kind of the headwinds that the industry has been facing now for about 2 years, that they all are, they're still there. And so, now that all being said, there are going to be some big winners here in Minnesota, right? Like people that come in and do it right and figure out what they do and what they do well, they're going to be successful, right? Like Minnesota is itching to get this up and running. You saw it a couple of years ago with the low dose THC products that were approved. That industry exploded up here. It continues to be thriving. You go into any bar and they're right. All the drinks are there to purchase. They're on the, you got your beer list, you got your THC drink list, and they're there and they're thriving. So,
Also, liquor stores, right?
the liquor, I mean, you can sell it everywhere. So, but if you go to a liquor store, right? Like, there's MGM's a liquor store brand up here, that has lots of stores, and they have a section of, in the liquor store, THC drinks, and it kind of gets bigger every month where like beers
Are
might
you
be
seeing
pushed down a little
other
further.
product types on the shelves in these other environments, whether they're C stores or liquor stores? And how do you see those products impacting the kind of eventual growth once the rec market launches of marijuana products?
Sure. So yeah, you do see them. You see them everywhere. Gummies are everywhere. So there's a town up here called Eden Prairie. Eden Prairie has municipal liquor stores. So every liquor store within the city of Eden Prairie is owned by the municipality. And they recently launched a Name That Gummy contest because the city of Eden Prairie is going to have its own low dose THC gummy that they're growing and manufacturing and going to be selling. And so you will see those at the liquor store, kind of at checkout. You'll probably see those that you can see at grocery stores up here. People joke that there was a karate shop, or a, sorry, karate dojo that was selling the gummies as well. So they are literally everywhere. And I think what you're gonna see is that that market isn't gonna shrink, but people are going to find new places to buy them. And if you consider the Can of Curious crowd, the Can of Curious crowd isn't really interested. Like, they're not going to sit there and say, well, was this, hemp or marijuana? Or they're going to say, like,
Yeah,
how
they
many
don't care about the
milligrams?
molecule.
Right. Yeah. They're going to say, how many milligrams of THC? And this, and what is it going to make me feel like? Right. And so, and that's an opportunity for the new players to kind of like make those products for those individuals and say, hey, look, you can get this at a dispensary that's around the corner from your house. You just pop in and grab it, and it'll be there for you. So, the one thing that will be interested on all of that is the taxing and how the different products are taxed at different rates. I don't, I think you're aware, but they just recently hiked the taxes. So before the even before the first retail cannabis sale even occurred in Minnesota, the tax rate has already been increased. And when you
So
factor
is there
everything.
not parity between hemp products and marijuana products then?
No, not when it comes to the taxation. So those are different.
So a
That's
hemp
separate
product, it
products.
would theoretically be less expensive.
If the shelf price is the same, the out the door price is going to be less expensive. Now, that's set to change when the OCM gets oversight of the hemp products, which occurs at the end of this year. But as of now, that's what it is. So that's an interesting piece of it. But the hemp industry up here just in and of itself is pretty interesting. But in my opinion, it shows the demand for the product, that people want it and they're excited. And then the taxation thing, every state deals with it. The taxes here, eventually, they will be high, the effective tax rate, but it's going to be lower than Illinois. It's going to be lower than California. So,
It'll be interesting to watch the implications of that, because we know from other markets that people are quite price sensitive, and if and as you say, most consumers really don't care about the molecule. So if they perceive that the gummy in the convenience store is effectively the same as the gummy in the dispensary, but the out the door price is $1.50 cheaper, they're probably going to get it at the convenience store if they're regular
for sure.
consumers. So that's a
And I think that,
great thing
yes.
to think about if you're
Yeah.
market.
And I think the state is indifferent to those two scenarios where the state has concerns is, do they get it from the illicit market? Do they not even go to the convenience store? Right. So that's kind of, and every state deals with this, right? You've got people that have been buying their products that they're comfortable with from whoever they're getting it from a long time, right? So they're like, they're just like, why would I shift over to pay for a more expensive product just because I get it from a dispensary? Obviously there's lots of reasons to do that. Safety, testing, all those things, right? But you have to kind of retrain the consumer to do that.
That's right. And You see it across the board in all kinds of different categories. People will talk about how they prefer sustainable products, they prefer organic products, they prefer this, they prefer that. When they get to the cash register, typically people prefer the cheaper product. If there's two things that are effectively the same or are highly comparable, and one of them is 50 cents or a dollar cheaper, they almost always go for the dollar cheaper. There are some consumers that don't do that, and I don't want to offend anybody's sensibilities by saying that, but that's what the macro data says, and that's why supermarkets kind of work the way they do, right? And you have the cheap candy at the end right there at the checkout aisle because it's cheap and everybody can agree that peanut M&Ms are great, right? So let's talk about kind of what's coming, which you've been doing a little bit. What else is coming down the pipe? What should people that are either in Minnesota or looking strongly at Minnesota, because I know a lot of groups are considering buying these micro licenses or buying other type of particularly dispensary licenses right now, because I think, and I think you would say this, there's going to be some really interesting opportunity up there. But what should people be thinking about and what's coming in the next few months up there?
Sure. So any investor or purchasers of licenses that are looking to get into Minnesota need to understand that there are two different license types. There's the social equity license type, and then shortly thereafter, there were non-social equity, so just standard licenses. The social equity licenses have an ownership hold requirement period, meaning that you can't sell 100% of the license for at least a year after operation. They have a transfer of control restriction until the license is operational. And so they're a little harder to structure a deal around, especially if you want to truly buy someone out, right? It's not like you can show up and say, I just want the paper. You sell me the paper. I'll go build this. You got your money. That's great for you. And you're going to have to kind of be a partner with someone for at least a year in that scenario. What I'll call the standard licenses, you don't have those restrictions. There are certain restrictions on when you can transfer, but it can be a 100% transfer and you can move on once you hit those specific dates. So it's in that situation, it's more of like I'll lend you the financing to build everything out. Once we get the blessing from the state to open, we're now open. I can complete my buyout of you, buy your equity, and I'm off and running. So that's the first thing, is that anyone that's looking to buy here, they need to understand what license type they're buying. When it comes to retail, what is called a retail license up here that entitles you to five separate stores. So obviously there is value in having local connections, people on the ground in Minnesota that can help find real estate. You want to know where you're going to be compliant and also kind of where the population hubs are, where the trendy spots to put dispensaries are located. That's a big piece of it. Another thing that people need to understand is that, like municipal liquor stores, the Minnesota Cannabis Act allows for municipal dispensaries. And 13 cities have announced that they intend to do that. They are going to build city-owned and run dispensaries. I suspect that those cities will also pass zoning ordinances that, while they do not restrict anyone else from operating in the city, make it almost impossible for anyone else to operate within their city because of they're just going to zone it, zone them out, and except for the places that they're going to put their dispensaries. So just another thing of like making sure you know what cities those are, and making sure you don't try to buy real estate or waste your time going to city council meetings in a city that you're probably not going to be welcomed in. And then it's figuring out, hey, where do you think you're going to be successful? Is it up in Duluth because you're, across the bridge from Superior, Wisconsin, and it's still not legal in Wisconsin? Is it in Moorhead because you're across the border from Fargo, and Fargo's a pretty decent population hub, and you got North Dakota State up there, and people are going to come over and buy? Is it down in Albert Lea, close to the Iowa border, where people are going to come across the border in Iowa to buy it? Is it in Minneapolis and St. Paul, where you just heck a lot of people, so put it where a lot of people are? Minneapolis has been very vocal about their support for dispensaries within the city. They've got a great interactive map you can utilize to find compliant locations that are zoned correctly. Minneapolis has essentially rolled out the red carpet and said, we want dispensaries in the city. Some other municipalities, not so much. Kind of like they've passed ordinances, but you got to kind of go dig around on their website and cross-reference. Okay, is it zone commercial one, but also not too close to residential? But and so like this plot will work for me. And again, so like that's that local on the ground kind of support that I would suggest anyone interested in the state seek out and utilize. I know there's a lot of great brokers up here that have been for the last 2 years working to find compliant locations, working with municipalities to talk through things to make sure that they'll work. And then the last thing I'd say is understanding the cross-licensing ownership restrictions. If you're a larger investment pool and you want to have multiple storefronts up here, then don't jump in and buy a micro business because it seems like the price is too good to be true, because the price is probably too good to be true. Once you have a micro business, now you're blocked out from having these other licenses and you end up with one storefront. And so, it's not rocket science. It's not any different than any other state, but you need to take the time to understand what the state is offering and where the opportunities are. Just like in every state where we see a program roll out, there's going to be frustrated participants that feel as though it did not go the way they wanted to go and their investments don't work out. There's also going to be people that hit absolute home runs and are huge winners and have a ton of success up here. So it's just about finding those right opportunities. And when you find them, then capitalizing on them and staying focused and making sure that you don't make any mistakes, because mistakes up here are going to be costly. Because like we kind of the thread throughout all this is that the tribes are really good at what they do and they had a head
And they're
start.
ahead.
Yeah, and they're ahead. So like if you're gonna be here, you got to make sure you don't make any mistakes, because like I said, there's gonna be opportunities. But if you make mistakes, tribes had a head start and they're really good.
Well, it sounds to me like you'll need a really strong local guide up there in Minnesota to make sure you don't step in the wrong place and you're always stepping on the right spot. And it sounds to me like, David, you'd be a perfect type of person to be doing that for folks. So
Yeah,
that's
happy
why
to
we
take any phone
chatted.
calls
To
if
just
anyone's
chat about
interested.
this. Yeah. Well, I
Yeah.
will be posting your information with the episode. So I would encourage people to reach out to David. And of course, the firm can handle a litany of cannabis things, pretty much anything cannabis related we can cover, from tax to real estate to corporate to whatever regulatory thing might come up. So, David, thank you so much for your time and your insight into the Minnesota market. And that'll be it for today and our Greenspoon Martyr Cannabis Quick Hit.